Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my
home. We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle.
Hey,
so he can play football.
He's coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
We know!
Steeler Nation, everybody else that is actually listening to this, hello, my friends. It's, as Justin Timberlake would say, it's gotta be May. And it is May. Minicamp is right around the corner, and this is the Steelers hangover. Now, look, what do we have to be hungover about? Nothing much has been going on in Steeler Nation, except for one great thing that happened on Friday night, and that's a good reason to have a happy hangover, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. But before that, let's talk to our very good friend, a guy I like to call the Marathon Man, somebody that inspires me daily just knowing him. Even though we've never shook hands and met in person, I consider him one of my closest friends. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Anthony DeFeo.
Hey, Brian, those are some really kind words. I think much too good for me, but I thank you for that. And we are going to rectify that not shaking hands thing. We're definitely going to get together for something, training camp, Pirates game, you name it. I'm looking forward to it.
You know what? I think we just do it right and just go to a Steeler game. I mean, I want to go to a Pirates game too. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But I think Steeler game, have the hangover in the parking lot after the game.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Either that or here's my other suggestion. And I know we're making plans here, but we've got – what state do we have a bunch of fans in, of the fans of the hangover?
Is it Jordy? Am I right?
I'm sorry, you cut out there. Did you say New Jersey?
Yeah, Ken from New Jersey, a couple other people from New Jersey. Is that the
yeah,
state you're
Ken,
talking about?
Vito's from Jersey. And then
yeah,
then
yeah.
we've got we haven't heard from him in a while, but Bryce from Brooklyn is a hangover fan, and so that Jets game, I know it's really close to Christmas, but a Jets game would be a lot of fun.
It sure would. And it'd be a great podcast afterwards, depending on what number 26 does, either way.
Exactly. So, I mean, my guess is, here's my bet that he doesn't even play in that game. He'll be shut down just because of injury. And I hope not. I hope he doesn't, because after the he who shall remain nameless, after he passed that title on to another big-chested guy, I have no problem. I could say his name again. I could say Love Bell's name again. And, you know, I'm not even mad at him anymore. And maybe it's because he got trumped. But maybe it's just maybe Trump's not the right word to use, because I can't use that as an adjective anymore because it means a completely different thing. But maybe it's because Big Chest bested him in lunacy. Or maybe it's the fact that he had kind words to say about James Conner, and he's doing the opposite of NBC there. I just don't And maybe it's the fact that he didn't get the contract that he wanted, even though he got paid. I kind of don't hate that guy anymore. But that's my personal opinion, and I'm sure others vary. But when it comes to Big Chest, yeah, not a fan. But with that being said, we've got a whole show to talk about. We've got to talk about happy things, the Steelers, and the happiest thing that happened in Steeler Nation in a long, long time was matrimony. It was a wedding. And a lot of his teammates were there to witness Mr. Ryan Shazier not only be joined in wedded bliss with his wife, but dance at his own wedding. And I got to tell you, this isn't a sports fan, but as a human being, and I just think it's just absolutely a beautiful thing. And I just shook Shazier's hand just a little over a month ago. And, told him what kind of inspiration he was when I took my nephew to an autograph show. And I'm sure a lot of people said the same things. Just a gracious guy. It's the second time I had an opportunity to shake his hand. And, when you just put football aside and what that guy has battled and come back from and persevered from, it's just amazing. And I don't think we would have ever guessed that, Tony, on December 4th. And that was one of the worst sporting nights of my life. And I shared it with you, and you and I were practically in tears because we knew what had happened on December 14th of 2017. December 4th of 2017. And that was a Monday night game, so we were on until about 1 o'clock in the morning. And we were absolutely devastated. And to say that the man was dancing at his wedding, and that's what we said, we just hope that he could be able to play with his kids and to have a quality life. And you know what? I'm not one to put caps on this guy anymore. I mean, do I believe in my mind that he's ever going to play again? I think it's doubtful. But in my heart of hearts, I'm like, this guy isn't stopping. And at this point, you never know. The odds are stacked, but you never know. But to watch video of him dancing at his wedding, I just thought it was beautiful.
I totally agree. And to show you what kind of great guy he is, a great teammate. I mean, who was there? You had Arthur Motes, Mike Mitchell, Jesse James came back. They were all there to celebrate the day with him. And the progress that he's made, I mean, he came walking out. He needed assistance. He needed a cane. His fiancée was with him, helping him, his soon-to-be bride, helping him out there. And the progress he made from then just to now, to be able to do box jumps and to dance at his wedding, I mean, it's just a great story. And it's so much better than many even thought possible the days after that tragic night on December 4th, 2017. So, yeah, it's great to see the progress he's made.
Have you ever done a box jump?
Well, yeah, at the gym, but nothing like I saw even Ryan Shazier do after suffering a spinal injury, which, like you said, it's amazing the progress, and I wouldn't doubt him at this point. But yeah, I've done a box jump, but not like even what he's done after the injury he had. So it's a pretty phenomenal thing.
I just did my first box jump probably a couple of weeks ago, and it wasn't, I think it might have been a three-quarter of a box, since I'm new to it and I'm overweight, and I did it, and it wasn't probably wasn't the height of what Shazier did. And just, I mean, that's just an amazing thing too. So God bless that man. I hope he just keeps going. and that has nothing to do with football. I just hope he just keeps on going. And he's just an absolute inspiration to me. So that was the good news in Steeler Nation. But besides that, it was a pretty slow week because minicamp has started for other teams. It does not happen until May 10th. So Friday, minicamp starts, which means that my article about Steelers numbers, possible numbers, we'll see how many I got right. I only got two right last year. I'm thinking, Tony, I got to tell you, I'm calling my shot. I'm going to say that I'm going to get 5 of 9 right. In fact, okay. Now, you know, I'm going to go higher. I'm going to say 6 of 9. And we already know that I pretty much have 2 correct. So that because we know what Devin Bush is going to wear. We know he's going to wear 55, and I already ordered my 55 jersey. I thought I'd tell you that. But I guessed that before they announced it, and I guessed it for 2 reasons. Because I knew they wouldn't give him 50, and
yeah.
He doesn't have a number. The left linebacker to wear number 10 was in the 70s, Brad Van Pelt. Of the New York Giants, actually wore 10 back in the late 70s, early 80s. You remember Brad Van Pelt? If you collect
I remember
football cards, you know who he was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know he wore number 10, though.
So, but, you know, I I knew that was out. And like I said, you know he's not going to get 50. Because 50 is technically still occupied. Because that player is on the PUP list. And 40 is unlikely. So I was thinking, you know what? Double digits are more epic. And then I was thinking about his godfather, Derek Brooks, wore 55. So that's why I guessed that. So I will take credit for it, even though the news came out before I wrote the article. But I will take credit. And Benny Snell Jr. is not hard to figure out, being 26, being the fact that he wore that in college, and he already was holding up a 26 jersey, so you know he's going to request it. I love the confidence of that guy, not being afraid to wear that jersey. But the reason I'm bringing up all these things, there are great expectations for every NFL team right now. There's also confidence levels. If you're an Arizona Cardinals fan, you have confidence that it's going to be a new day and going to be exciting, but you probably don't have a high confidence for win totals right now. If you're the Cincinnati Bengals, you have blind confidence because you're just clueless. I'll probably take some heat from that, but it's just the God's awful truth on that. But if you're a Cleveland Brown fan, the confidence level's really high. In fact, they're thinking big things. And, you know, you can't really blame that. For the Baltimore Ravens fans, you probably wonder, the confidence levels are probably next because – believe it or not, let me ask you this, Tony, and we can even make this a fact or fiction because we do fact or fiction on the show. Baltimore Ravens fans are a pessimistic bunch. Is that fact or fiction? And this could go either way.
I'd say, you mean as far as the 2019 season?
No, I'm talking general.
Question. I'd have to say fiction. They seem pretty confident usually. They always seem confident that they can beat the Steelers. So I'm going to go with fiction on that one. I mean, they've had some success and over the last couple of decades. So, yeah, I'd say they're a pretty confident bunch.
I kind of find them pessimistic. I live in Maryland, as you know. Same with two other staff members, our editor, Jeff Hartman, lives in the state of Maryland, and so does Dave Schofield. And, in fact, we actually live in the same town. I'm not going to mention the town's name, but that's how we all know each other. And we met at various times. But it's really funny. Baltimore fans around here, I mean, it might be a little bit better right in Baltimore, but even so, it seems that unless they've got a team that's cruising and going 12-4, they're not very confident. They always seem to be like waiting for the other shoe to drop. If that makes sense. Even after they won the Super Bowl, I think they're actually more pessimistic than some Steeler fans too. You know, every time I talk to one, I'm like, you guys are going to have a good team this year, and they tell me so many reasons why they're going to suck. And these are season ticket holders. It's really funny, but I find them to be a pessimistic bunch. And I actually find them to be a fair-weather bunch too. They go to the stadium so much more when that team's winning. But when they're losing, it's like they're dead to us. But that's just my perception. So I've already just completely denigrated two fan bases. So I'm just going to stop with that. But what I'm trying to get to, Tony, is confidence levels are mixed in Pittsburgh right now because of the subtraction of two players. And we've talked about this, and, you know, technically it's really the subtraction of one player, because one player didn't play last year. But I keep hearing how you've got to replace 15 touchdowns, and how are you going to do that with a Deontay Johnson? But we've seen guys leave before. Do you remember after the 1994 season, you lose Barry Foster, and you're like, all right, there's no way. No way they're going to replace that guy's production. So they did it with two guys and went to the Super Bowl. Now they got this yards and went to the Super Bowl. Anything's possible. Plexico Burress leaves after the 2004 season. No way they're going to be able to replace his production. So they go ahead and they bring in I think I'm starting to lose my mind. Cedric Wilson, there it is. I just lost. So they bring in Cedric Wilson. How are you going to replace a guy like Plexico Burress with Cedric Wilson? Well, they replaced him with a Lombardi trophy. He caught that big pass against Cincinnati, the trick play, in that game they were losing at one point in the wild card. He didn't have blockbuster numbers, but they played as a team. Ben Roethlisberger made it clear a few weeks ago when he said, we play for each other and we're going to play for each other. And I love that, because it kind of goes back to, he hasn't borrowed it from himself yet, but it kind of seems like, remember when he was calling them a band of brothers back in 2008?
Yeah, that was his locker room speech. That was his way of uniting the team.
I think they're even more of one. So my question to you, Tony, and help me out with this, what do you think, and you live in the city, so mm-hmm. you live in that area, and what do you think the confidence level is in the city of Pittsburgh right now about the actual realistic confidence level?
I think people are becoming more confident now than they were right after when the stuff was going down back in February and March, because, you know, I think they're like you, they're remembering the past and how they were able to win with players that were less talented, so to speak, than an Antonio Brown or a Le'Veon Bell. And they realize that they still have a franchise quarterback. So I think the confidence is starting to pick up, and it's always, you know, after that draft, after they what they did with Devin Bush and everything, I think that really helped spike the confidence level. I'm not saying people are predicting 13 wins. I don't think that's where they're at. I think it's more like they feel like they're going to be able to compete for the division and maybe even win it. So I think the confidence is definitely picking up, and that's good to see, because I think it was pretty low right after the season. I think people were expecting some bad things for 2019, but I think now people are back on board. They see more of a finished product, even though training camp's not even here yet. Then, you know, they see how the pieces might be able to fit together, you know, after free agency and the draft, than they did before, you know, when all this stuff was going down. You didn't know who was going to be the receiver, who, you know, what was going to happen with Bell. So I think it's definitely gotten better. More positive vibes, for sure.
Well, great. I'm glad you said that. But now, I just got done talking about the Baltimore Ravens fans and just my perception of them. You think they're a confident bunch. I think they're a very pessimistic bunch. Where's Steeler Nation in 2019? Would we lean more to a pessimistic bunch or an optimistic bunch?
I'd say, judging by social media, it's definitely more pessimistic. I mean, it's hard, and that's why it's hard to gauge. You know, when I talk to people in person, they're more confident, like they're more positive about the team. They really, you know. But when you talk to people online, or you just read stuff online, everybody's pessimistic. So if I'm judging it by my personal interactions, you know, being, you know, like you said, living in the city and talking to my friends and people I see at work, and people I interact with, like at the baseball game the other day, we were talking about the Steelers, and it's more positive. It's more, you know, I think we can get it done. But if you're on social media, you know, the sky is falling 24/7, 365. So I think it's a mix. With me personally, I think it's more positive. My interactions, but on the internet, it's definitely pessimistic. So. It's not really much of an answer, but...
No, okay, no, I get it. And I tend to agree. I agree with that sentiment exactly, because there's a lot more pessimism in social media. But the people that you're seeing at Pirate Games and the people that you're seeing out that want to talk about it, they're probably less pessimistic, because there's a... I'm not saying better level, but there's a different level of fandom. There's a more, I don't want to say optimistic, but there's a more level-headed amount of fandom when you talk to somebody in person than somebody that is going to spew venom over a keyboard. And I know you, Tony, aren't that familiar with people spewing venom at you through a keyboard and a message board and a comment section.
Yeah.
I know that's never happened to you, but believe me, it does happen. So I know that's going to be hard for you to swallow, but yeah, it actually does happen. But
it's pretty, I can't even imagine what that's like.
Yeah.
Someday
well,
I'll come
I mean,
out of my bubble.
It's a crazy... Yeah. John Travolta, Boy in the Plastic Bubble in 1977. We're 76.
Ah, good reference.
Somewhere around there. Yeah. I remember seeing that as a kid. I believe it was 76. And I remember being like, what if they put me in a bubble? And I have no disease. But I've been like, I was probably about 5, and I'm like, I don't want to go in a bubble. What would I do? And then my parents were like, you're not going out of a damn bubble. Shut up. Please don't put me in the bubble. And then Seinfeld came with the bubble boy, and then it was all over.
I'm sorry.
Then we Moops. I was waiting. It's Moops. It's Maurice, you idiot. All right, this show's going down fast. So let's go back to realistic expectations. So I'm going to start with some records, and you just say realistic or unrealistic, higher, lower, whatever you want to say. So let's start with let's just start with 6 and 10. Okay. Is that realistic or unrealistic?
For the Steelers?
Yeah.
Oh, that's unrealistic. 6 and 10,
okay.
Unrealistic for sure.
7 and 9.
Unrealistic still.
8 and 8.
No, I'm still going with unrealistic.
9 and 7.
I think that's more realistic. I think that's they're one of those teams right now that's like a few bounces away from 9-7, 11-5 kind of thing. So yeah, that's more realistic.
13-3.
Ooh, I'd say it might be a bit unrealistic at this point. But again, we don't know the final product yet.
12-4.
And I'm gonna go unrealistic.
Okay, 11-5.
Now you're talking. I think that's more. I think that might be their ceiling, which is not bad. Realistic.
So, no, it's not bad at all. We're looking at between 9-7 and 11-5, and you know,
yes.
9-7 teams do make the playoffs some years. So we've just set realistic expectations for the Steelers, 9-7 and 11-5. Now, we have plenty of new players this year, Tony. Lots of new faces. And let's talk about some of those. We're not going to talk about each and every one, but we're going to try to get through as many as possible. Let's start with, and we'll go quickly through these guys, but let's start with Steven Nelson, because Steven Nelson was the first guy to sign a free agent contract with the Steelers. Cornerback from Kansas City. Still of good age, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, 26 years old. Interceptions. There's a realistic amount of interceptions for Steven Nelson. And let's go ahead and put the number at 4, let's go higher or lower or spot on.
Well, he was thrown to more than any cornerback in the league last year. So if he can get that kind of if he can be targeted like that again, I'm going to say that's spot on 4, which would be great
okay.
for a Steelers cornerback, by the way.
And so that would make him a success, most likely. That would be a successful acquisition, I guess. That doesn't count blown situations, but 4 is not bad. Okay. Next is Dante Moncrief, wide receiver. Never has he had more than, I believe, 60. So let's go ahead and put the number of catches at 55, and let's go ahead and put the number of touchdowns at 5.
Well, I like the touchdown number, definitely 5. I think that would be great for him, based on the offense as a
whole.
Is
it realistic?
And realistic. Yeah, based on how I think it's going to go as far as the distribution of labor, as Mike Tomlin likes to say. As far as the catches, I think he can get 55 is definitely realistic, and I think he can push that maybe 60 for sure, because he's not going to be the primary target. But if they start doubling Juju Smith-Schuster, well, somebody's going to have to be open, and why not the number 2 receiver? So, yeah, 60 would be a fine number. So 55 is definitely realistic.
Yeah, I like 60. I think that's a good number to shoot for, especially with we want to see, gosh, because this is one time that I'm looking at the stable of receivers, and I'm thinking back to not a very successful year for the Steelers, but I believe 1999 was an interesting year for the Steelers when you had three guys have over 60 catches. One of them was Troy Edwards. Another was, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I would think Bobby Shaw, and another was Hines Ward, and they all had around the same amount of catches in the 60s. We expect Juju to have higher, and but we're not going to put expectations on Juju right now because we're talking about new guys. But we expect Juju to eclipse 100. I think that's safe to say. But Moncrief, if he throws in 60, you're looking at you're still going to want to see 50 from Deontay Johnson. So even though we're talking out of turn a little bit here, we're still talking about receivers. Let's talk about Deontay Johnson. And let's go ahead with that same number of 55 and 5. Let's pin that on him too.
Well, I don't like the it's after what Juju did 2 years ago. I think that's pretty. I don't want to say it's realistic, but it's possible. It's definitely possible because they're gonna, I'm starting to like him more and more the more I hear about him and his abilities. And I think they're going to try to as much as they can, provided he makes the team, which I don't think is much of an issue. Get design plays to get the ball in his hand in space. Like short little bubble screens and slip screens, they're going to be trying. He seems like the perfect kind of receiver for that kind of stuff. So I can definitely see him approaching 55 catches, provided, he comes as advertised and is an exciting young rookie.
Devastating injury is the only way that outside of defecating on the Art Rooney statue is the only way he's not going to make the team. Even if he has a terrible camp, he's making the team.
Absolutely.
There's, Stenquist Golson situation is the only way that that he doesn't make the team. So, what's a more realistic number for Johnson then? I mean, because it sounds like you're saying that the 55 and 5 is a stretch goal for him. If you were to be in my chair right now and throw it out, what number would you throw at me?
I'm going to say 40. And the reason why I said that is because you don't have Antonio Brown there right now, whereas Juju had him at his rookie year to take the pressure off, whereas you don't really have – and Martavis did nothing that year, so he became a second target. So we don't know if Dante Moncrief is going to be able to take the pressure off of Juju, which would then open up – or I'm sorry, we don't know if Juju is going to be able to handle the pressure without Antonio at this point, like as far as being double-teamed all the time. So that's the only reason why I'm saying 40 might be more realistic for Johnson.
But what about touchdowns?
Oh yeah, I mean, if I could see him getting 5 for sure if they design special like if they have special plays for him, especially like in the red zone. He definitely has a reputation as a playmaker, and I hope that translates into the NFL. That would be really exciting.
Let's go to the Steelers' seventh round draft pick from the University of Maryland. Go Terps. And Derwin Gray, practice squad or on another team? Or making the 53-man roster? What's most realistic for this guy?
That's funny you mentioned that because I plan on writing an article about this guy. I just have a feeling he's going to make the team. When you look at what they've been able to do with guys like him in recent years, and there's definitely a spot for him to make the team. If you Marcus Gilbert's no longer there, and Gerald Hawkins has really done nothing, that void as far as depth is concerned. So I mean, with Sean Sherrod having such a great reputation already working under Mike Munchak all these years, I have no reason to think that they can't, he can't develop into something special down the line. So I'm going to say make the 53-man roster.
Someone's drinking the Schofield Kool-Aid on Sean's Barrett.
Yes.
Okay, so, you know, that's – there we go. And while we're at the lower end of the draft, let's keep on going with that. I'm going to give you two guys, Sutton Smith and Ulysses – I almost want to call him Grant, but Ulysses Gilbert, so the love child of Ulysses S. Grant and Marcus Gilbert. So what is realistic for these guys? Special teams on the 53-man roster, practice squad, or cut and on another team?
I'm going to go with I think there's this year the expectation should be for those guys is you know, because they're Sutton's under, you know, right now Sutton Smith is under kind of undersized, and I don't know much about Gilbert at this point, so I'm going to say if they can make contribution on special teams, which would mean they made the 53-man roster, I think that would be a reasonable expectation considering where they were both drafted. I think that'd be reasonable if they can both make a team that way.
So if those guys make the team, Dirty Red's out of a job, even though he's an inside linebacker. I know the decision has not been made on Smith exactly because they're saying that he can play inside. He is considered an edge rusher, especially with 15 sacks last year. And it looks like Grant could be, excuse me, Grant. I'm going to call him Grant. Gilbert could be a little bit of both as well. So do you think those two put Dirty Red, Tyler Matakevich, in great jeopardy?
I think at this point that they do. He is a great special teams player, which is kind of, it'll be interesting to see how they, you know, what decision they make if both Gilbert and Smith do have the ability to make the team this year. Are they happy with Matakevich being a career special teams guy and a great one at that? You know, and are they willing to keep him over two guys that they feel might have a better future at their actual positions? That'll be interesting to see. But I think right now they do put him in jeopardy because he has played in the league for 3 years and he really has done nothing at the inside linebacker spot. So, you know, there's always room for young guys to come in and make a name for themselves on special teams. And if the coaches think they have a chance to do something at their positions, they're going to probably go with those guys. So, yeah, I think he is definitely at this point in jeopardy.
Zach Gentry out of the University of Michigan, 15 catches, one touchdown.
Yeah, I was thinking about him, and I think with Grimble there, they might be able to sneak him on the roster as a number three tight end. But at this point, I don't know. I just have a feeling that he might be a practice squad guy. I just have that kind of feeling. I'm basing it on nothing other than his production and the fact that he doesn't have much experience at that position yet. I think he might be a practice squad guy.
Okay, now here's an interesting one. Fourth round pick. It looks like we're going backwards. Benny Snell Jr. out of the University of Kentucky. We're not going to talk yards on him. We're going to talk touchdowns. And I'm going to say eight.
Ooh, really?
Well, that's
I'm going to say unrealistic.
Okay.
The over-under. I'm going to say that's unrealistic. And the reason why is I think – and I know Kevin Colbert said that they might be changing their philosophy on running backs, meaning not running their wheels off. But I think James Conner still – he earned the right last year to be the number one guy. You know, his only issue is injury. But provided he stays healthy, he proved last year he can be the guy. The question is, Is he going to get the ball? Is he going to see 90% of the reps like Le'Veon Bell? Probably not. But even if he sees 70% of the reps, and you still have to split the other 30 between Samuel, Jalen Samuels and the new guy, the new kid. And I think Samuels proved last year that he might be worthy of more time in the offense. So say he gets 20% of the other reps, then you're looking at 10% of the reps for Snell. So I think he might have a good future. But I think as far as 2019, I think he's going to be more like a Fitzgerald Toussaint kind of guy.
You know, I don't see him getting 8 touchdowns, so I agree that it's realistic. But it's unrealistic. But here's the thing about Snell for me. I kind of feel that we're going to see more of him and less of James Conner on third and short. And
really?
Even in goal line situations, because we're talking about preservation, and I just see him as being a 2004, 2005 Jerome Bettis type player. I was at Jerome's last home game in against Detroit on January 1st of 2006, and it was 3 touchdowns in, I believe, 1 yard rushing. It was something like that, 3 touchdowns on 2 yards, and that's not the only time he's done that. He did that in the opener in 2004 against the Raiders. He had 3 scores and no yards whatsoever. I mean, 1 or 2. I mean, just so minimal that it made you scratch your head. He had some of the coolest stat lines late in his career. So I can see that possibly happening with Benny Snell Jr. Not the lack of yardage like Jerome. I think you would actually see more yardage out of him, but I can see him be a short yardage specialist. And if they are going to shake some things up in the running game, that could be something they do, because the whole thing is about preservation of Connor at this point. And so that's what makes me wonder. Now, here's a guy that I'm anxious to talk about, Justin Lane. Now, we're going to do this one a little bit different. Justin Lane will make it so Artie Burns is not a Steeler in 2019. Fact or fiction?
Wow. I love Artie, but I think that might be a fact. I think they've lost so much confidence in him. If Justin Lane shows that he might have a great future, they might just cut ties with Artie and say, we messed up on that one.
Well, they already declined his option, which is and I think there's a great sigh of relief for everybody in Steeler Nation. But it does suck. It sucks because this guy has hopes and dreams, and he's a very pleasant person. And I hate to see it. You never want to see anybody not live up to their expectations. But with that being said, I mean, it's still a business. So, you know, you think about that. But I think Justin Lane could probably make him obsolete. What would be a realistic number for Justin Lane? I'll let you throw it out this year. And we're talking about 2 things here. Number of games played. Now, let me rephrase it. Number of games started. And not only that, but number of interceptions.
Okay. Started? I'm going to say 2. I think it's because of injury. I think if somebody did get hurt, they'd probably go with a Cam Sutton or something. So I'd say 2. As far as interceptions, I mean, he is tall, and he does have a knack for that kind of thing. His passes, defense, and everything in college were kind of high. I'm going to go with 2 as well. For interceptions.
I was kind of leaning there. And so that's, I think that's a successful rookie campaign when you're looking at something like that. I'm not going to talk interceptions because I kind of agree with the 2. But let's go ahead and say, I'm going to say five games started.
Okay.
I think it will be because of injury as well. So now we have two more guys, two more newcomers, one a draft pick, one a free agent acquisition, and they're both inside linebacker. Now, of course, we've got a hybrid situation and a possibility with Mark Barron coming from the Los Angeles Rams being a in that nickel linebacker position, in that sub-package linebacker situation, excuse me. So with that, will he is he even competing for a job with Devin Bush? So that's the question you have there. But if we're going to talk about these the two linebackers, we might even want to talk about where Vince Williams fits into the situation, because there's a school of thought that there will be a lot of packages where it's speed and it's both Barron and Bush on the field without Williams on the field. So it just, it depends on the packages that they come up with, but let's look at realistic expectations and what we need to expect out of Mark Barron first. And really, is he an inside linebacker or is he a sub package linebacker? Is he a starting inside linebacker or sub package?
I think right now he might want, his mindset might be, I'm a three down inside linebacker, meaning Mark Barron, but he's coming at it from a different place than Morgan Burnett was last year. Morgan Burnett was an actual free agent, whereas Mark Barron was cut and became a free agent. So he might be more grateful to be on the team. So I think he would be more accepting of being a sub package guy as the season progressed. If Devin Bush is indeed a great rookie, if he has a great rookie season and does, ascend to the starting role sooner rather than later.
Let's throw out 10 starts for Devin Bush.
I'd say, just based on how it just has that Marquise Pouncey 2010 feel to it, or even T.J. Watt of a couple of years ago, I'd say it's realistic. I think you could see him starting before Halloween if he is indeed the real deal.
And, you could even throw in Ryan Shazier, but he was hurt a good bit of his rookie season. But that's a guy that we can also but he was anointed the starter right away, and you could tell that he was the starter just against Buffalo. In
the first or second preseason
game.
Yeah.
When you saw him, you're like, wow, this guy's real.
Head and shoulders above everybody.
And just, you know what, we've never really talked about how long his arms were, but his arms just looked, he looked like? Remember when we were a kid, there was a, I think Fox 53 had this Plastic Man. Do you remember Plastic Man?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. That's
so,
a good one. I like that, yeah.
And so his arms just looked like they were made of rubber and just long. And it's like me, if I try to scratch my back, I'm looking for, I have an ice scraper. I've got a paint roller that I'll use sometimes because I just can't reach the middle of my back. I've got these short arms, but I think there's nothing this guy's, if he has to scratch his back, he's not missing anything. That's how long his arms are. but I'm getting off on a tangent here, but Bush, so we talked about 10 being realistic for him. Tackles, let's throw out, I'm not going to talk sacks and I'm not going to talk interceptions. I'm just going to talk straight tackles in 80.
You say 80?
Yeah.
That's definitely realistic. Yeah. For that position, that's definitely, I could definitely see that. Absolutely.
AFC Rookie of the Year.
Woo. Oh, man.
Defensive Rookie of the Year. Let's go with that.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say at this point, being in the running, so definitely realistic.
Bust.
Devin Bush, a bust? Unrealistic.
And yeah, I'm talking first-year bust. I'm talking
first-year
bust. Yes.
I just don't see it. I don't see it because I think his athleticism is so much, even right now, before you even see him in action, he just seems so much more athletic than anybody that they have. I just don't see – I see him being able to do things in their defense that they couldn't do last year, even as a rookie. So I'm going to say no, unrealistic.
See, Troy Polamalu was one of those guys that it's like the number of people that went to Woodstock. You know, there was only like room for 100,000 people or so at Woodstock, and a million people claimed to have been at Woodstock. Everybody in 2003, not everybody, but there were a lot of people calling him a bust after his rookie season. I was not one of them. But with that being said, a lot of people talk about how bad his rookie year was. And I just saw a guy, and I was remember saying back then, I just see a guy in that position, learning the position, because Dick LeBeau and Bill Cowher did not play a lot of rookies on defense.
Yes.
Mike Tomlin and under Mike Tomlin, rookies have a much better chance of playing than that of the Dick LeBeau years. And because it was rare to actually – basically, my assessment is in the old Dick LeBeau system, you were an apprentice if you were a rookie defender.
Yes.
And so you basically redshirted one full year. And you're on special teams, and that was about it. And you played here and there.
It was so complex. It was such a complex scheme back then.
But that's different in these days. I don't think he would be a bust, a first year bust, or a first year disappointment. But my question here, though, to wrap this up is, are the expectations that we're putting on Devin Bush, are they realistic and are they fair?
They're probably not fair, but judging by what they did to get him and what he could mean to this team, the expectations are realistic. I think people have to realize it's but they, you know, fans know what they did, so their expectations are going to be ratcheted up even higher. And they know what he could mean to this defense. They know who he's trying to replace. They might not be fair, but they're definitely realistic. And it doesn't mean that they're fair, but that they're realistic.
Now I'm about to say one of the most ridiculous statements, and people are going to have my integrity in my head for this, but in 4 years, if Devin Bush is out of the league because of inept play and he is indeed a bust, I will actually still say that this was a fantastic trade, even if he busts out and is a horrible player, because at this point in time, how many teams are not taking this guy at number 10?
He wasn't going to make it past 10 for sure. I mean, somebody was going to draft him. And you know, 4 years from now, everybody's going to have 2020 vision. But at the time, this was absolutely the right thing for them to do. This is the right move. This is the guy the guy that people were, all the experts were saying, was somebody who could be the next Ryan Shazier, somebody who could come in to see it better, eventually anyway, if not sooner, definitely later. And they did what they had to do to go up and get him. So it's still going to be a good deal. It's like when a team makes a trade at the deadline, even if it doesn't pan out, you can't say, well, that was a bad deal because they shouldn't have made that deal. They should have made it. It just didn't work out. Same thing will hold true here. It was the right deal.
You know,
it was the right thing to do. It just didn't work out.
Great GMs and great personnel directors have to gamble. And sure, you gambled away a second-round pick, but this is what needed to be done. And you got to praise the move. And I went crazy because I was on Bleacher Report or something, and they were ranking the top 40 trades on draft day. And
mm-hmm.
this trade was the 15th best trade. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I started in the top 10 to save time. And I got to the bottom, like, yep, we know who number one is, and it's like the Redskins or something. And I was like,
mm-hmm.
what? You know, I mean, I looked, and then here it's at 15. And I was, because I apparently this person thought they gave way too much up for him. But it's just funny perception, and there's so many instant reactions, knee-jerk reactions, like we like to use here at BTSC. And, but even if we bust out, I will attest, and you can hold me to this, I will still say it was a great trade just because you got to make that gamble. I know this is in a show about baseball, but the move to go ahead and bring Chris Archer over and cut ties with Tyler Glasnow does not look like a good move right now, even though Archer's not bad. Glasnow is really doing well, and that's a first-place team in Tampa Bay. But it just seemed like that was the time was right to make that move. And you had to make a splash. And there was a deadline deal, and you had to make a splash to set up 2019 and 2020, and that's what they were trying to do. I will attest that was still a good move. So there's a difference between good moves and smart moves, but there's a difference between good and smart and successful is what I'm trying to say. Because one that everybody goes crazy on me on, and I will till the day I die as a Steeler fan, I will say that it's really hard to call Senquez Bolson a bust. Was he an unsuccessful draft pick? Very. One of the most unsuccessful Steeler draft picks in history. But we can't really base the level of success and call him a bust for what he did on the field because he never saw the field. Injuries doomed him, but poor play did not doom him. So we never got to see. We just label him a bust of a pick, but when you're looking at what he did in college and 14 interceptions and like great amount of or maybe I'm sorry his senior season was 10 and what he was doing, you would have never said at the time that undrafted guy on the other side Mike Hilton was going to be the most successful Steeler. You would have said you were crazy.
Yeah.
But Mike Hilton didn't get hurt and had a chance to fight, claw, and become a great player. And I might be incorrect. I don't know. Was Hilton drafted late with the Colts, or was he undrafted with the Colts?
I think he was an undrafted free agent.
Okay. So, I thought that was the case, and then I start to doubt myself what I'm saying. So, but with that being said, that's back to my Senquez Golson routine that I do all the time. Not a lot of people are going to agree with that, but, you know, that's how Brian thinks sometimes. But with that being said, we've established some expectations for all 12 newcomers. that are coming. And I just want to throw one more guy. I'm not going to throw expectations out, but I'm just going to say PJ Locke, who they just grabbed as an undrafted free agent, not on Saturday like they did with everybody else. I think this is a guy realistically makes this team at safety. And one of my big gripes is they didn't address the safety position, but a lot of people think that this guy could be a guy that one of the big undrafted free agent gems. So that would be interesting to see as well. So we'll throw that 13th guy out there and say PJ Locke. Do you think it's realistic that Locke makes his team?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely room there for him to make it behind Ed Davis. So there's definitely it won't be hard for him to challenge for a backup role if he does come in and shine. So yeah, it's realistic for sure.
Tony, it's been a long time since we hit the hour mark on this show. That is not a hangover after a real game, but we just hit the hour mark. And so with that being said, I would like to thank you, my friend, for sharing the last hour with me when you could be partying with beautiful women, you could be watching WWE Raw, or you could be watching John Tortorella and the Columbus Blue Jackets try to stave off elimination. And if they've already been eliminated, I don't know. But you could have been doing all those things, but you chose to hang out with me, and I appreciate that. I did call you the Marathon Man at the beginning of the show, and I did not explain that. But congratulations, Tony. I'm really proud of you, and I do not say this with any sarcasm whatsoever, but I think it's admirable that you went and ran a 5K in Pittsburgh. Was it yesterday or was it Saturday?
Saturday morning. And okay. Well, thank you. It was a lot of fun. It was we raised some money for a great cause. So it was really a great day, even though as I said in the article, I almost hurled, which is not lying at all. it was a struggle, but I'm happy I did it. So thank you for that.
Well, that's absolutely fantastic. I think it's really admirable. You may have been less uncomfortable than I was this weekend, because I spent my weekend as a Boy Scout leader in a tent in monsoon-like Maryland conditions.
Oh,
and,
ouch. Enough said
and
there.
I'm still soaked. But that's also a very rewarding thing, something that I really enjoy doing. But
absolutely.
But you might have felt more sane afterwards, and much better. Your body might have not hurt as much after one of the most embarrassing things, and nobody saw it. I'm glad to report, but I actually fell through my cot. Just like in the middle of the night,
wow.
My cot just. It didn't collapse the material just gave way and it ripped and I landed on the ground and I was so tired I just didn't move for the next 5 hours. I just stayed in that one position. Just on broken cot. That's how knocked out I was. But with that being said, I'm now turning into a great moment for you by talking about myself, so I do apologize for that. But no, once again, very proud of you, entire BTSC nation, and I'm going to share pictures with the comment section, and I'm sure when we write this story on BTSC about your great moves, the first thing we'll see is hashtag fire Tomlin. But with that being said, we're behind the steel curtain. My good friend, Tony DeFeo. I am Brian Anthony Davis. You, our friends, have just been hungover. Good night, and we'll see you next week.